Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Godin. We're Monday, January 16th, and back from New York City is my friend Arpin Basu. Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for waiting for me. The podcast is a little late today. Our notebook was a little late today, all because of my travel plans. But yeah, I am glad to be back. Canadiens had an interesting weekend in New York, a couple of competitive games. A goaltender who went up against two of the best in the league and looked pretty good doing it, but yeah. We're not going to start there today. We got some more pressing matters.
Some breaking news almost.
Kind of breaking news. I mean, earlier Monday, I have a suspicion that the next time Kent Hughes sees Bill Guerin, he's going to offer to buy him dinner. Because Bill Guerin did Ken Hughes and Jeff Gordon a real solid today by signing Matt Boldy to a 7-year contract extension worth $7 million a year. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, they already had the Jack Hughes contract, which is in the same ballpark and is something that they could have used in their negotiation with Cole Caulfield. And you know, that was there already. So that was good to have. But now they have some added ammunition. Jack Hughes, by the way, is 8x8, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, that's correct. So Jack Hughes signed for 8 years, $8 million a year, number one overall pick. So I think that kind of set the ceiling for Caulfield's deal. And I think Boldy has now kind of set, not really the floor, but like kind of the floor. I think they have a very interesting parameter. You have 8x8 for Jack Hughes, 7x7 for Matt Boldy, then you have Caulfield, who should fit right in between those two somewhere. Because, you know, Boldy's obviously been in the league a little bit less than, and has, you know, similar point production, not the same goal production. So I feel like Caulfield could make an argument that he deserves more than him because he's a goal scorer and that comes with a premium. But we've really got a good handle on where Cole Caulfield's contract should come in.
Yeah. The fact that Matt Boldy is meant to be a goal scorer for the Minnesota Wild. And I think that they're paying him thinking that that's what he's going to be for them for the next 7 years. But as it stands today, he scored 12 goals so far this year, whereas Caulfield has scored 26. So
Boldy has scored 27 in his entire career in 89 games.
Yeah.
Caulfield has 26 this season.
Yeah, that's it. And so he's on pace. Caulfield's on pace for 48 as we record this podcast. So he's going to, I mean, you could say this is really the low end of what Caulfield could ask for.
And well, yeah, you say it's the floor, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And it's I would argue that it's probably below the floor.
Right.
I mean, you say that Hughes should ask, invite Guerin for dinner. I think it's just in the proportion of what those two guys who were drafted the same night, right, in 2019, only three picks apart. Mm-hmm. I think that it's just in line with what they've been doing this year. And just a side note, we all know about the Minnesota Wild's cap situation. They're going to be in cap hell for the next 2 years because of the buyouts, to Ryan Suter and Parise. And I was thinking, if there was one young up-and-coming player like a Boldy, like a Caulfield, who would get a bridge deal instead of a long-term deal, I would have thought it would have been Boldy for that precise reason, so that it would enable the Wild to keep themselves a little bit of flexibility, go through these next 2 years where they're really handicapped by those two buyouts, and then be able to pay Boldy a bigger amount. So they chose to go 7x7. But to me, Caulfield, the way I see it, he's a lot more likely to be in the range of Hughes, and in the range also of his captain, Nick Suzuki. So Suzuki's at 7.875. I wouldn't be surprised if the amount was the same. Exactly the same.
Which would be an ideal situation for the Canadians. But the thing is that the way things were trending, and you know, it bears mentioning that the Canadians are in no rush to get this Caulfield contract done. I don't get the sense that there's anything really going on that front. Anything too intense, at least, but there's definitely no urgency yet to get a deal done here. And, you know, there's also the Trevor Zegras contract, which has not been signed yet. So that's, you know, you're kind of rolling the dice a little bit, but I think the Ducks are also probably pretty happy with how things are shaping up. You know, I mean, the fact that the, you know, this Hughes Boldy window, let's say $7 to $8 million, if they can get Zegras in at that number on a long-term deal, I'm sure they would be ecstatic. The Canadians would be ecstatic. But, you know, there was a possibility with the way Cole Coffey, and there still is that possibility, let's be clear. I mean, it's, who knows what Pat Brisson is going to argue when it comes to Cole Caulfield. Pat Brisson is also the man who negotiated Jack Hughes' contract, just as a side note. But it's possible that they'll ask for more than what Hughes got. I don't see how, you know, when Hughes signed that contract, he wasn't doing what he's doing now, to be clear. You know, he signed that earlier, but it still was showing very encouraging signs. He signed in the middle of last season, actually. So he was having a good season, but obviously was not, you know, lighting the league on fire the way Hughes has been for much of this season. So, but it's really, you know, it's given a lot of clarity to the Cole Caulfield situation. I think anyone who was thinking that Caulfield's going to kind of climb into the $9 million range, I don't think that's really likely now based on what's going on. So, you know, the portrait's kind of clarified a little bit. There are some definite parameters to work with. And, you know, I think this contract helps the Canadians. Because actually, Matt Boldy, I mean, listen, you can value goal scoring more, and I do. And so, you know, having a guy like Caulfield, this doesn't perfectly reflect who Caulfield is. But in terms of points per game over their career, Matt Boldy is a shade higher than he's at 0.76 and Caulfield's at 0.69. You know, obviously he doesn't get many assists. He got his first assist since November 23rd last night in New York. So, but he's
a bit of a Cy Young in that sense.
A bit of a Cy Young. Yeah. There's McCann in Seattle, who I think is kind of the clubhouse leader for the Cy Young Award. I believe he's at 22-8 the last time I checked, but wow. Caulfield got his 10th assist, which doesn't help his Cy Young case, because you like a single digit in that assist box. But he's at 26-10 now. So it's
Michael Grabner, if I'm not mistaken, used to be a big Cy Young guy.
Brandon Peary.
Oh, Brandon Peary too, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Brandon Peary was a big one. Really a puzzling case of a guy who never really caught on in the NHL despite his ability to score goals like crazy. But in any case, Cy Young or not, Cole Caulfield's next contract, I think, has come into a little bit of a clearer view. So yeah. I think Jeff Gorton and Ken Hughes are probably pleased with the turn of events on on Monday with Bill Guerin signing Matt Boldy to that deal.
I agree with the fact that when you say that there is no urgency for the Canadiens, I think that the big difference between the two situations is that the Minnesota Wild are, you know, in a hunt for a playoff spot, and they want to get ready to make some acquisitions at the trade deadline. And if they want to add some players that are not just rental players, but that are signed beyond this season, it's good to know how much money you have actually to spend.
And not only that, they have guys that they need to sign in the offseason.
Yeah.
And because of the cap situation that you mentioned, the huge penalty they're taking for the Parise and Suter buyouts, you know, they need to prioritize and see how much money's left for X, Y, and Z. But you know, in that equation, Boldy was X. And so they wanted to get that out of the way. The Canadians don't quite have the same urgency to their situation. They don't need that much clarity. They do, I think, have a better idea of what Caulfield's going to cost, but it's not like it's preventing them from doing other business the way it might with the Wild.
Yeah. So Cole Caulfield, most likely, I think, the next 40 goal scorer on the Montreal Canadiens. I went on to say in an earlier podcast at the beginning of the season that I thought that he would score 50 on a few occasions over the course of his career, and I feel comfortable with that. So he would be the first player, you know, assuming that he signs that long-term contract and stays in Montreal for a long time, he would be able to put up higher goal totals than what we've seen in a long, long time. And the reason why I bring this is because we had a question from one of our listeners. And before we played and we discussed that afterwards, I just want to leave you the number. If you have a question, a comment that you want to leave on our voicemail, well, don't hesitate to do so. You can call us at 646-847-9404. That's 646-847-9404. So without further ado, let's listen to the voicemail we got.
Hello, my name is Max, long-time listener, first-time caller. I believe that's the only proper introduction to these things. So there's a stat that I've noticed years ago, and it's very telling of the Habs fan experience from the past 35 years, and also the team ineptitude to draft great forwards. In 1986, a 30-year-old forward scored his 258th goal for the team, placing him 10th on the all-time goal-scoring list. His name was Mario Tremblay, 10th all-time goal scorer for the Habs. And remember, he was a third line, sometimes second line winger, who retired at the old age of 30. And to this day, he's still 10th. That means that no Habs player have scored 258 goals since. Now, I did some digging, and since 1987, 134 players scored 258 goals or more in the NHL, and only two have been drafted by the Habs: John LeClair and Max Pacioretty. That's it. That's the list. We're not talking about 500 or 400 goals here. 258 goals. So I'd be very curious to hear you expand on this, and maybe also share your experience as former Habs fans and now journalists covering the team. And do you think fans crave a superstar forward as much as I do after 35 years of players barely scoring 30 and barely staying long enough on the team for them to actually reach 258 goals? Thank you. And sorry for the very long question.
So thanks a lot, Max, for that interesting question. It's nice to bring up the name Mario Tremblay in a different, you know, different situation than his infamous stint behind the bench, and more a look back as him as a player. Initial reaction, maybe to seeing that stat, hearing about that stat.
My initial reaction is shock. Like, yeah. I did not realize that Mario Tremblay is that high on the franchise list for goals. I'm stunned. And so that's what I'm dealing with right now. I'm still trying to digest that Mario Tremblay is that high on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got one more goal than Howie Morenz. For crying out, he's played twice as many games almost, but still, that's... It's also worth noting that ninth on the list is Aurel Joliat.
Yeah.
So, which goes to the point that Max is trying to make, that this list is not going to be, or has not been updated in many, many years. This top 10 goes Lafleur, Béliveau, Cournoyer, Richard, Lafleur, Béliveau, Cournoyer, Schutt, Geoffrion, Lemaire, Henri Richard, Aurel Joliat, and Mario Tremblay. Top 10, and it's been that way, since Mario Tremblay retired or stopped playing. So
right.
It's a valid point. Cole Caulfield looks like he's going to break that mold. But other than him, there's been obviously Max Pacioretty, as mentioned.
There's Brendan Gallagher. Thomas Plekanec.
It hasn't been a glittering list of guys that the Canadians have drafted and developed, just to be clear. There are some guys that they developed but didn't necessarily draft, Nick Suzuki being one of them, obviously. Draft and develop forward talent, yeah, it's been pretty lacking for quite some time. I think that's going to change, though. I do kind of feel that that's going to change under this new direction, because when you look back prior to Marc Bergevin, Pierre Gauthier, Bob Gainey, even going back to Serge Savard, I mean, a real conservative way to see the game, a belief that defense and 200-foot play is the key to success, I think is one thing that sort of rings true for all those guys. And not to say that it's not important and that 200-foot game is somehow a bad thing. It's not. But, you know, trying to develop pure offensive talent and skill is something that I know Kent Hughes believes in a great deal. And by all indications, Jeff Gorton seems to feel that way as well. And so I think that priority, I think, is changing. And I think we saw it, you know, I mean, drafting Philip Mesher forget Slavkovsky for a second, but drafting Philip Mesher where they did, you know, a smaller, highly skilled, fast offensive player is a great indication of that, to me at least.
Well, I think that just to if I want to expand on that question, what's first thing? Mario Tremblay played in the late 70s, early 80s, in when hockey was extremely offensive. So as he pointed out, he was a middle six forward, so would was not necessarily perceived at the time as someone who would light the league on fire, but the whole league was scoring a lot more. And if he uses the benchmark of 1987, well, 10 years after, it was the dead puck era. I mean, from the mid-90s to the mid-2000s, there was a decade there where there was a lot less goals that were scored. So I think that it affected everybody. In the years before that, the Canadians struggled to draft properly, draft talent. The big defenseman from the Western Hockey League, that was this prototypical defenseman that they would draft always in the first round and they wouldn't pan out. But mainly, I think one thing that really stands out to me is the fact that Mario Tremblay played 852 games for the Canadiens. Mm-hmm. And there are guys... And he scored during all that time, he scored on average 0.3 goal per game. Well, there are guys among the Canadians, and an interesting list, that have a better goal per game average than Mario Tremblay. Stéphane Richer, Cole Caulfield, Claude Lemieux, Max Pacioretty, Vincent Danfous, many. It's just that nobody sticks for this long with the team now. And
They didn't draft Danfous.
No. I know. I'm just going down the list of guys that they. That actually scored at a better clip. You know.
And okay.
So it's probably that list is probably 30 deep before you get to Mario Tremblay. Brendan Gallagher is same pace than Tremblay. Christopher Higgins, a guy who ended up having the similar type of usage that Mario Tremblay had. Anyway, the idea is that guys don't stay with the same teams through their whole career. And that's one more reason why I think that Cole Caulfield, should he sign that long-term deal, is likely to break the trend. Because Max Pacioretty, who is playing, scoring 0.36 per game with the Canadiens, he played more than 200 games less than Tremblay. And he's like 32 goals behind. So he would have been that guy. And now,
I would say,
yeah.
I mean, I would say that if Cole Caulfield signs a 7-year extension, which means his goal total from the end to the end of this, from the end of this season and 7 years on, by the end of that contract, I would be pretty comfortable saying he will find himself, because he's already got 50, he's already got over 50. I would say he's going to find himself sixth on the list by then, assuming he stays healthy. Because fifth on the list right now is Steve Schutt. Sixth is Bernard Gefrion at 371.
Mm.
And Schutt is at 408. So I think if Cole Caulfield signed for 7 years, he will be sixth by the end of that contract. And if he signs for 8 years, I would even go so far as to say he might be fifth. So.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy to think of, but you're right. The Canadians have not had players stick around long enough to compile numbers in this uniform. This is all assuming that Cole Caulfield A, signs that contract for that length, and B, gets to the end of it. But if he does, I could see that happening. And so then he would find himself, what, how old is Cole Caulfield now? 21?
22.
So he'd be still shy of 30 years old and be sixth or fifth in franchise scoring, right around the 30-year-old, right around the 30-year-old mark. So just to address Max's other question, just quickly, what it's like to be former Hab fans who become journalists. I don't know how long it took for you, but it took me like, I would say a year transitioning from that reality, from the reality of Habs fan to Habs journalist, where I didn't consider myself, or I didn't behave like a fan anymore. But I had a year where, you know, and I was a very Cub reporter. I was like a stringer for CP. I just did games. I didn't go to practice. None of the players knew me. But for about one season, I would get really excited every time before going into the Canadiens dressing room. It was a thrill. And I was, you know, I didn't say much. I didn't ask that many questions that first season. I just kind of kept, you know, sort of observed how things are done. And observing how things are done, it dawned on me that I cannot behave that way. I cannot behave like a fan and be emotionally invested in what's going on with the team in order, if I want to do my job well. And so that took a year. And by the end of that first season, I quickly understood that I can't do this. And it, I don't know, how long did it take you?
Overnight.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, good for you. That's good.
Well, yeah.
You had been a journalist for a while at that point. See, that's kind of the difference. I got that gig right out of journalism school. Like, it was my first job.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a big difference. Yeah. Yeah. I'd been covering the Expos before that. And then a little bit of other sports, you know, a little bit of the Owls, covered a golf tournament in Ireland, a Grand Prix in Australia. So a few things. But when I arrived in the Canadiens dressing room, and I know that I had been a fan. Like, I remember, like, 2002 Zednik and Kyle McLaren. I remember I was at Champs that night. And gosh, I was still a fan back then. Yeah. But it...
I covered that game.
Yeah, so, well, there you go. Yeah. I was not covering hockey at that point. But once I did... I mean, it was really overnight. I ceased to be a fan, sometimes it went totally the other way. I started hating them.
Oh, believe. I often tell people, I do get this question relatively often, and the one thing I say is that if you want to stop becoming a fan of the Canadiens, just start dealing with them on a daily basis, and you'll stop being a fan real fast. So yeah, it's getting better now, but for years and years and years, they were just impossible. Not impossible. I don't want to paint it as they're like this ghoulish organization, but it's just always, they were always frustrating. There were frustrating elements of dealing with, there still are today, frustrating elements of kind of work, having a professional relationship with the Canadians. And so that helped.
It's probably like being a journalist at the Vatican.
Yeah, or being part of the White House press corps. Like, you know, kind of, I mean, that's the problem, is that the Canadians saw them like that, saw themselves as that.
Gosh, for sure.
It's as if you're covering the Vatican. You know, I always tell people they think it's like we're covering the White House, and we're not. We're covering a child's game, you know, and it's slowly changing. It's changing for the better a little bit. There's still little conflicts, little frustrations, but they have gotten a little better to deal with over the last tiny little while.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We do actually, just, you know, speaking of like drafted forwards and players who, you know, could potentially make this list. I mean, you know, Brendan Gallagher, it's not good what's going on with him. You know, I mean, he came into this season thinking that he was going to prove something to everyone. He was determined about it. And he had spent his whole summer preparing for the season so that he could physically withstand it. And he was extremely confident. And we played a conversation for you guys at the beginning of the season on the podcast I had with Brendan Gallagher, where he talked about how he was sure that he was going to go back to being the player he was. And when healthy, he wasn't quite that player. Wasn't bad, but was not as productive and as impactful as he was. And now here he is yet again, mired in this kind of injury muck, where they announced he should be back in a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden that became much longer than that. And so this is not a great turn of events for a guy who has several years left on a contract at $6.5 million a year.
No, for sure. He's two goals shy of the 200 mark, so he would eventually, should he round out into form, you should get into that discussion from earlier on. But you're right. I mean, I'm starting to wonder, you know, where does he go from here? If he, mm-hmm. you know, he'll miss another 4 or 5 weeks, and then hopefully he'll be back in healthy to finish his season. But ever since Martin St-Louis took over, he has not seen Brendan Gallagher healthy for an extended period of time. And I asked him about Gallagher the other day, and I said, well, what, you know, when you saw him go down and it was announced that he'd be gone for an extended period, what, so far, what had been your assessment of his play? And he said, well, he says, I'm not saying that Gallagher has reached a point where he has to say goodbye to his productive years. But I know that for any player who gets to that stage of their career, it's difficult. But he says, I'm not saying that Brendan is there right now, but he's been able to evolve as a player. And the time that he's coached Gallagher, he said, just the time that I've been here, I saw Gallagher evolve as a player. Not necessarily being as productive, but evolving and having more of a rounded game. I'm not sure to which extent this I saw the same thing. To me, I saw the same old galley. But the biggest takeaway is because obviously everybody can see that, you know, how he doesn't skate as freely as he once was, ever, even though he was never the roadrunner. But despite the looks and despite the eye test, the stats say a different story. And the one of the main stories that it says, especially since Martin Saint-Louis is behind the bench, is that playing with Christian Dvorak has been a great disservice to Brendan Gallagher. And if he was to play with a different type of centerman, because Gallagher, because of his lack of speed and because of just his toolkit, he's better served when he's playing with a centerman who's good in transition, who's going to carry the puck, who's going to make effective passes, and where Gallagher, when he enters the zone, can be more of a give-and-go type of guy, a guy who will shoot the puck, but he cannot be counted to be the guy that's going to carry the puck. But Christian Dvorak is not a very good transition centerman.
No. Well, you're describing someone like Philippe Dano, but you're also describing someone like Kirby Dach.
Yes.
Which, who we saw at center on Sunday and, you know, looked quite good. And for the first time, I you know, just off the top of my head, I think, how many would you, maybe four or five times this season, Martin Saint-Louis has tried to sort of extricate Dach from the Suzuki Caulfield line and play him at center. It's never lasted more than a game or two. Because whoever replaced him on that line made that line not work. And so now here we are. Now, obviously, Gallagher is not coming back imminently. But the point is, I think, with Kirby Dach that you mentioned about Gallagher is that I think he can help a lot of guys in a similar way. His transition game is so good that he can drive his own line. As long as Suzuki and Caulfield are able to play without him and remain productive, and this, like Martin Saint-Louis, I asked him about that after the game on Sunday in New York, and he just thought that their game overall is getting back to a level where he thinks it's possible that they could do that. And I think it'd just be so beneficial to the Canadians that Suzuki and Caulfield, whether it's Yul Armia, whether it's whoever playing with them, that Suzuki and Caulfield be able to operate as a duo so that Dach could play on another line and create a different dynamic on another line and create kind of matchup headaches for other teams would be important for this team, because I think, you know, the Canadians
are better. That's why they went after him in the first place.
Well, the Canadians are a better team with Kirby Dach at center. I mean, they just are. You know, I mean, it's, you know, face-offs aside, like, forget the face-offs for a second. Every other quality he has would make him a highly effective center. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't go so far as to say he's going to be like a superstar, but, you know, he turns 22 next week. He's a young player with a great toolkit, a rangy, you know, in basketball terms, you call players like Dach long because they, yes, they're tall, but they have long arms and they're able to get their hands on balls and whatever. Well, in his case, he's got a great reach, a long stick. He's able to create win pucks back, as Martin Saint-Louis keeps mentioning, but create turnovers with that reach in a highly effective, unique way. You know, I mean, I feel like that's his superpower, is stealing pucks from players while he's still relatively far away from them. Like he'll pick guys' pockets and you're like, how did he do that from that distance? Like, it just doesn't compute when you see it, but all of a sudden he has the puck and he's skating in the other direction. So, you know, I think the Canadians need to invest in this situation where Dach's at center and not let other secondary things impact that, as I wrote in my story last night. But I mean, it's, you know, what are your thoughts on how that should be handled?
Well, it's by accident that he ended up, you know, going on the wing and proving to be the best complement that the team has for Caulfield and Suzuki. But Caulfield and Suzuki are good enough players that they should not need a third player who plays well with them in order for that line to work. They should be effective enough as a duo. Otherwise, you know, what are the chances that you're going to have those three guys healthy for all the time? Probably, you know, it's not going to always be the case. So you have to make sure that at least two of those guys, and obviously Suzuki and Caulfield, they've developed that chemistry. Well, make sure that you can build on that and find a guy who's going to be a good complement. They have not been able to find it for one reason or another. A, it can be personnel. And B, it's also the Suzuki and Caulfield's own growth in their game. When they're more mature as players, it might be easier to find them a good complement because they will have figured out certain things in their own end, or, you know, in terms of puck recovery, forecheck, whatever. And there's going to, it might be easier like 2 years down the road to find them a good complement. So I think that in a development year, it's also that to say, well, Suzuki and Caulfield have their own development. Let them develop as a duo. And in the meantime, we'll find somebody who can work with them. But the Canadians need Doc a center. And it's so obvious with Monahan being out, with Jake Evans, who's probably going to be out for a while. There's no other choice. And that's why they went after him. It was to be potentially the second line center for that team. So, they have like a decent set of wingers to work with. If they want to generate some offense and diversify their offense, well, they need to be able to build something around Doc. And going back to my first point, when Gallagher comes back, because of his long contract, because of his struggles lately, if they want to make things work for him and try to salvage the situation and try to see that the ship has not sailed, well, they should try to put those two guys together.
Yeah, and the guy, I mean, when you say they can go find a compliment for Suzuki and Caulfield over the next couple of years, they might have that guy. That might be Juraj Slafkovský. You know, he's not ready for it right now, but at some point, I can see him playing with those guys or see him playing with Doc. I mean, it's really either or, you know, but they do have a guy already that they're developing. And, you know, he got hurt last night in New York. I don't think it's going to be all that serious, but I mean, you know, it's, you never know. The Canadians didn't really give many details on it, but it's, he could be that guy, you know, I mean, that's, you know, and there's other, I mentioned Meshar earlier, you know, there's other guys who are going to be coming, but yeah, it's important to get that squared away. It's just, and it'd be silly not to, like, even when Monahan comes back, the tricky thing becomes is when Evans comes back. So then you have Suzuki, Doc, Monahan, Dvorak, Evans. So that's tricky, but Monahan could play the wing. Evans could play the wing. I mean, they should make every effort possible. And Monahan, they should put him back at center when he gets back because they hope to trade him in a month in a little bit more than a month. But every effort should be made to keep Doc at center because long-term, that's the goal. You want him getting used to that role and getting used to, you know, exploiting his strengths. You know, the stuff that I mentioned earlier, he's really kind of unique in that way as really the team's best transition player already at just about to turn 22. He's their best transition player. I feel very comfortable saying that. I can't even think of anyone that's close to him in that department. I mean, Nick, Suzuki to some extent, but yeah.
But when you see Martin Saint-Louis putting Doc at center and then switching him back to the wing because, you know, the game asks for it, the potential result of the game asks for it. What do you make of that? I mean, that I remember we made we did a survey with the Athletic readers early in the year, actually it was during the summer. And there was a question about Martin Saint-Louis and how people thought that he would fare? Would the honeymoon last, etc.? Would be caught up by his lack of experience and the lack of experience of his staff? And one of the options that the readers could select was that he could be he could show some impatience in the way that he coaches, in the sense that he'll be in a rush to win because he wanted to win so much as a player that it's hard to completely park that aside and say, I'm going to go, you know, full on development, because he sees on a daily basis what's the impact on the morale and the focus of the players when they're able to get a win. But at the same time, it's very tricky, because if you go after the result, then you make choices that are different than if you're going after the process. And this team is meant to be process driven this year.
Well, okay, I'll tell you what I think about it. First, let's listen to Marte St. Louis answer a question on that at Madison Square Garden after that game.
We've all been intrigued, you know, can he play center in this league? And you know, he's 21 years old. I don't think any of us were ready to say that he wasn't going to be a center. Sometimes circumstances make you, you know, have to really take a look at that now. And not that we haven't throughout the season, but you're kind of forced into it now. And I thought he gave us a really good game.
So what I don't like about that answer is the part where he goes, you know, sometimes circumstances make you really take a look at that now. Not that we haven't, but we're really forced into it now. And that's what I don't like. They should have been forced to it long ago, because that's the better long-term thing to do. You know, you shouldn't be forced into it because Jake Evans got hurt. You should be forced into it because you see Kirby Dach as a center and you should play him at center. It seems like the priorities are kind of wrong there. And so, you know, that's kind of how I look at it. And when you think about it, and again, not to like just read the story I wrote in New York, but you know, as I pointed out in the story, like Sam Montembeau goes toe to toe with Ilya Sorokin, who, if I had a Vezina vote, would be on the ballot for sure, if not number one. Toe to toe with him, toe to toe with Igor Shesterkin, comes out on the winning side of that one. Has a tremendous weekend playing back to back in less than 24 hours. Really remarkable performance. He's starting to erase the doubts that I had about how real this is. But you're not going to erase them completely until you get a proper sample size of his, and he plays. He gets a workload that's somewhat closer to a traditional number one goaltender workload. So when Jake Allen comes back, what happens there? Again, are you better off just playing Jake Allen because he gives you a better chance to win tonight, or making it a more even split at least? I'm not saying make Montembeau the number one goalie, but make it an even split so that you can see how does Montembeau handle a workload like this. Is this going to turn back into a pumpkin, or is this for real? You're not going to know that unless you give him games, and you're not going to know what you've got in Dach. I mean, you know, Marty saying we're all intrigued to know if he can play center in this league. We'll find out. Play him there. You know, I mean, what's this season about? What's it for? It's for that.
No, that's true. And it's true too regarding Montembeau. I mean, it's who knows, you know, he was picked up on waivers. He looked like a number three guy, although some teams thought more of him and saw his potential. But I mean, let's not forget, when the Canadians picked him up, he was meant to be a stopgap for a few days until Carey Price came back. Yeah. And then he'd be put on waivers again. So it's not as if back then they had like long-term plans for this guy, but he's in his mid-20s. He's getting better still. And who knows where it's going to stop, because there is a clear improvement in his play. So do you stick with Jake Allen, who's a known quantity, but you stick with him because you signed him to this two-year deal and you're sort of committed to him? Or you try to see, well, let's see where this takes us. And honestly, the team doesn't lose anything by doing a 50-50 split. Other teams are doing it, but now we're slightly below the one game out of three for Montembeau. And he's had like two really heated periods, heated moments in the season where Saint Louis could have chosen to say, okay, well, I'm going to give him more games, but he turned back to Jake Allen as soon as he could. So,
well, yeah, I mean, during that first one, sort of the Montembeau heater where he was clearly outplaying Jake Allen. I mean, Marty, he was, I don't want to say he was stubborn, but he was steadfast in his belief in Jake Allen, you know, bluntly stating he's our number one goalie. No, Jake's going to play because he's our number one, and it really giving a public show of confidence. And I think Jake Allen was really struggling at the time, so I kind of understand that. And also, let's be clear, like, it's when we're talking about Doc and Montembeau and all these decisions, when you go through a stretch like the one they went through over the holiday break, I can understand making any decision to get out of that. That's understandable. So if that means putting Doc on the wing to get out of what was becoming like a really damaging tailspin where they're getting blown out in games, that I could understand. But bring him, once they find their game, put him back. You know, I mean, it's, I do understand over the course of a season that you have to manage games and you have to try and get some victories and maintain a certain floor of morale, because I'm convinced that development, if you go below that floor, development doesn't happen as smoothly, right? It does. I don't feel it's as efficient an environment to develop in when you're below a certain level of morale or spirit or belief or confidence or whatever, however you want to label it. So that's something that Martin St. Louis is in charge of, you know, of maintaining that. And so just competitiveness. But as long as that's maintained, like, even if you're losing games, but you're competitive in games, then that's the bar to me to go and see things, you know. And if it's not Doc and if it's not Montembeau, Jake Evans, for instance, you know, Jake Evans is playing really well. And we saw it, actually. He was basically the second line center on the team. Like, that was labeled as their second line center. They went second in line rushes. They behaved like the second line of the team when Armia, Evans, and Dodonov,
yeah.
And so, like, it's, you know, you got a guy in Jake Evans. You're not, I think you have a decent idea of what his floor is, but his ceiling seems kind of blurry. Go see what it is. Let's see what it, you know, I mean, and there's any number of cases like that, you know. So at some point, Slafkovský, you're going to want to give him a look. Maybe with Suzuki and Caulfield. You know, it's the one guy who hasn't really gotten an audition there, and I understand why. They're trying to go step by step with him. They don't want to rush it. But at some point this season, it'd be nice to see him with those two guys, see what he can do.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So, over the weekend, St. Louis decided to turn to Montembeau twice in a span of 20 hours. And he stopped 36 pucks one night and 38 the day after. It's, to which extent should we be concerned about how the organization views Caden Primeau at this point?
Well,
because the confidence level seems extremely low as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is obvious. Well, okay, so to get a sense of, if you want to understand how low that confidence is, this is how it all shook out. So after the game Saturday, a busy game for Montembeau, Eric Raymond, the goalie coach, goes up to him and says, right then and there, so how do you think you can go tomorrow? Now, generally, you would let the goalie kind of sleep on it and see how he feels in the morning and have that sort of be the, okay, how are you feeling? You think you can go tonight? Mm-hmm. No. Right after the game, you think you can go tomorrow? Now, there is no goalie on earth who answers no to that question, so Montembeau naturally said yes. As soon as you put that decision in the goalie's hands, you're essentially making the decision. So it was already clear to Raymond that Primo should not be in nets at Madison Square Garden. And Marty leans on Raymond for all the goaltending decisions basically are not made by Raymond, but he's going to follow his suggestion 9 times out of 10, if not 99 times out of 100. So Jake Allen gets hurt. You call up Caden Primo, clearly with no intention of playing him. None whatsoever. Unless there's an emergency. I asked Marty about it, and he said, well, Primo hasn't played a lot this year. He got injured. We don't want to throw him in there. I think he needs some time. So he's had the benefit of facing NHL shooters in practice, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't think he can come right out and say, well, I didn't think he gave us a chance to win the game, which is really what it is, right? I mean, that's the fact of it. And so, I think two things. One, what Marty said about Primo has some merit. Yes, he got hurt this year. Don't forget he had, an excellent playoff in Laval last year. I think the organization was pretty encouraged by that. This season hasn't gone quite as well. I think he's still a wild card. He's still an unknown to them, and definitely not someone that they have a whole lot of confidence in right at this moment. But the other thing is that there's just zero goaltending depth in this organization. The fact that they had to call up a goalie that they had no intention of playing is not good. And this is second year in a row they've been in this situation. They had to throw Primo to the Wolves last year because they had no one else to bring up until they made the Hammond trade, right? So I don't know how you solve this problem, because you can only realistically have six goalies in the whole organization. So if two of them get hurt, I think most teams would be kind of in a bit of a rough spot, but I think
the timing is particularly bad, because I mean Primo was out for almost a month and a half after he got hurt. I think he got a puck or a stick while he was sitting on the bench in Laval. And he played only one game on January 6th, gave up 5 goals in that game. He played one game before he was called up. So the rust argument, I totally get it. There's also the fact that the Canadians had the second game of that back-to-back in Madison Square Garden against a very good team. And it could have been nerve-wracking for Caden Primo to make his season debut in the NHL at Madison Square Garden in such an environment, not knowing, having not played all that much. But you look at the schedule down the road, and when will there ever be the right fit for this kid to play and be eased into a game? Thinking, never. Okay, well,
it'll be in Laval.
Well, probably, because otherwise it would be, it would be in Detroit next week, but it's not going to be against Winnipeg. Florida, something tells me it's a game that they'll want to win. Saturday night against Toronto, meh. Boston, meh. So then you go to Detroit on 26, and I suppose that back then Jake Allen will be back anyway. So
Jake Allen's close, but just so that's clear, Jake Allen was on the ice for a long time after the morning skate at UBS Arena on Long Island. So he's not that far off. So I don't think they're going to have to, I don't think they're going to have this consideration for Primo. It's not going to be relevant for very long.
But the hesitation towards him, his potential, what he can become for this team, speaks also to the fact that the pipeline at the goalie position is bare. Actually, it's full of unknown quantities. I know that the organization is reasonably high on Jakub Dobesh, who plays for Ohio State, and he still has, again, this year, a very, very good season. But apart from him, And it's still a crapshoot in his case. But apart from him, there's really not much. I don't think that Frédéric Dicau in Europe is the answer. Joe Verbeek, he's still young, but I don't think so.
He's in Trois-Rivières right now.
So I wouldn't be surprised if among the deals that the Canadians do at the deadline, they try to find someone. When the college season ends and teams are able to sign some free agents, you know, among the senior players there, they could take a look at a guy. And there could be trades too. I think that the organization is conscious of the fact that, yes, you might want to draft a goalie at the next draft, but that same kid who's going to be 18 is going to be years away from being able to help. So if you need to add depth right now and find solutions on a more medium term, let's say, you need to accelerate the process and getting goalies that are 20, 21, 22, and not 18. So I think that there's going to be a movement on that front, and it's a priority for the organization at this point to sort of fix that situation.
Yeah, well, they could do both, right? I mean, they could draft a goalie while also trying to accelerate the depth available. I mean, listen, Montembeault is a perfect example. He's a third-round pick in 2015. He turned 26 in October, and he's just finding it. You know, I mean, still a third round pick, 77th overall, you know, 7 years after being drafted, he's like maybe a backup. He's like maybe he would make a really solid backup in the NHL. And maybe, you know, who knows? If he continues improving, maybe he proves himself worthy of becoming a starter. I don't wanna put him in a box or anything, but it's just, you know, it's a long process developing a goaltender from draft day to NHL day. And you got to get through all these kind of landmarks, waiver eligibility, which Primo's going to be facing at the end of this season. There's all sorts of hurdles getting a drafted goalie from point A to point B, B being the NHL. So, yeah, I think finding other alternatives, kind of scouring different sources of goaltending talent and the trade market, I think that is something that the team is going to look very strongly at in terms of bringing in goalies with some potential who are maybe have been roadblocked in their own organization or behind, you know, are behind too many guys or behind a high end starter or whatever. Yeah. I agree that it will be a priority. Just to close, you mentioned the Panthers and the Canadians having some incentive for them to win. The Panthers won on Monday in Buffalo, day game, yeah. Martin Luther King Day in the United States. Happy Martin Luther King Day to all our American listeners. And so they, if I'm not mistaken, have won five of their last seven. As we speak, the Red Wings are getting pummeled by the Avalanche 5-1. So that victory by the Panthers move them past the Red Wings. Why is that important? Because in the overall standings, that moved them further away from they're now 18th overall.
Yeah, because they passed Buffalo also.
They passed Buffalo and they've passed Detroit. They actually passed Detroit before that game, but they passed Buffalo. They might go to 19th. Actually, it looks like they will go to 19th because Colorado is going to pass them. But you know, they're quickly playing their way out of an interesting spot for the Canadians. The Canadians play the Panthers three more times, and the Panthers have a lot of division games. Everyone has a lot of division games ahead of them. So they're going to face Tampa a lot. They're going to face Boston a lot. They're going to face Toronto a lot. So there is still a chance for Florida to kind of come back into the lottery mix. But really the sweet spot for Canadians fans to monitor is, are the Florida Panthers 22nd overall in the standings? Because remember, you can only move up 10 spots via the draft lottery. So if you win the draft lottery, so they need to be 10th worst for the Canadians to have added odds to pick number one. So keep an eye on that. But, you know, it makes Thursday's game interesting. Canadians, although the players probably aren't motivated for that reason, you know, fans should be. And I'm sure management's going to be rooting, maybe for one of the only times this season, rooting really hard for their team to win on Thursday.
So. Well, not really, because, I mean, a team from the a win from the Canadians diminishes their own odds. The only thing that they should hope for is
you get the win and you get to beat
the Panthers. Just don't go to overtime. That's it.
Just don't go to overtime. But, you know, they want their team to win on occasion. So if they're going to win,
yeah,
you know, might as well be against the Panthers. At least that way they get the benefit of a win. Plus they get the benefit of a Panthers loss. So anyhow, just something to keep an eye on. Florida's starting to play as well as they should be playing. Which is not a great development for the Canadians. But I don't think anyone, I didn't at least, I don't think anyone expects the Panthers to be in that bottom 10 range. They're slowly climbing their way out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. But, I mean, they've got the way it shapes up for the playoffs, there's going to be three teams. It looks as though there's going to be three teams from the Atlantic and five from the Metro. So the real competitors, the real rivals right now for the Panthers will be all those teams from the Metro that could enable them, if were they to leapfrog them, to go back to a 4-4 playoff situation. So that means that they got to pass Pittsburgh, the Islanders, and potentially the Washington Capitals. So it's going to be a tall order. And if they're not in that position, they're going to be faced with the decision to potentially be sellers at the deadline. And if they do that, well, in all likelihood, there's not going to win more games after that. So it'll be interesting to see. It's a tough spot, but at least Bill Zito is going to sleep better if he knows that his team did not provide a lottery pick to the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, I mean, it could be a lottery pick, but not the number one overall pick. If they finish above 22nd, then they can't really pick number one overall, basically, is how it works. So, anyhow, just wanted to throw that in at the end. But, yeah, that's going to make it a wrap for us. We'll be back on Friday, obviously, with Spock Athletic. Here are all our disclaimers at the end of the show. For those who haven't subscribed to The Athletic, you can do so at a reduced rate at theathletic.com/athletic support. There's always a discount at that link for our loyal listeners. And otherwise, we will talk to you on Friday. Have a good week, everyone.
Yes. Bye-bye.